God said to Jacob, get up, go up to Bethel and live there, and make there an altar to God who appeared to you when you fled Esau, your brother. Then Jacob said to his household and all the others with him, get rid of the foreign gods that you have with you. Purify yourselves and put on fresh clothes. We're going to move on and go up to Bethel. There I will build an altar to Elohim, who answered me when I was in such distress and stayed with me wherever I went. They gave Jacob all the foreign gods in their possession and the earrings they were wearing, and Jacob buried them under the pistachio tree near Shechem. While they were traveling, a terror from Elohim fell upon the cities around them, so that none of them pursued the sons of Jacob. Jacob and all the people with him arrived at Luz, that is Bethel, in the land of Canaan. He built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, the Elohim of Bethel, because it was there that Elohim was revealed to him at the time when he was fleeing from his brother. Then Devorah, Rivka's nurse, died. She was buried below Bethel under the oak, which was given the name Alam Bakut, Oak of Weeping. After Yaakov arrived from Paran Aram, God appeared to him and blessed him. He said to him, your name is Yaakov, but you will be called Yaakov no longer. Your name will be Yisrael. Thus he named him Yisrael. God further said to him, I am El Shaddai. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation, indeed a group of nations, will come from you. Kings will be descended from you. Moreover, the land which I gave to Abraham and Yitzhak, I will give to you. And I will give the land to your descendants after you. Then Elohim went up from him there where he had spoken with him. Yaakov set up a standing stone in the place where he had spoken with him, a stone pillar. Then he poured out a drink offering on it and poured oil on it. Yaakov called the place where Elohim spoke with him Bethel. Then they traveled on from Bethel, and while there was still some distance to go before arriving in Ephrath, Rachel went into labor, and she had great difficulty with it. While she was undergoing this hard labor, the midwife said to her, don't worry, this is also a son for you. But she died in childbirth. As she was dying, she named her son Ben-Oni, son of my grief. But his father called him Binyamin, son of the right hand, son of the south. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Yaakov set up a standing stone on her grave. It is the standing stone of Rachel's grave to this day. Israel continued his travels and pitched his tent on the other side of Migdal Edar. It was while Israel was living in that land that Reuben went and slept with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard about it. Yaakov had 12 sons. The sons of Leah were Reuben, Yaakov's firstborn, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zebulun. The sons of Rachel were Yosef and Binyamin. The sons of Bilhah, Rachel's slave girl, were Dan and Naphtali. And the sons of Zilpah, Leah's slave girl, were Gad and Asher. These were Yaakov's sons born to him in Paddan Aram. Yaakov came home to his father Yitzhak at Mamre, near Kiryat Arba, also known as Hebron, where Abraham and Yitzhak had lived as foreigners. Yitzhak lived to be 180 years old. Then he breathed his last, died, and was gathered to his people, an old man full of years. And his sons Esau and Yaakov buried him. Chapter 36. This is the genealogy of Esau, that is Edom. Esau chose Kenani woman as his wives, the Canaanite woman as his wives. Adah, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. Oholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Sivon and Hivi, and Basmat, Yishmael's daughters, sister of Nevayot.
Adah, born to Esav, Eliphaz, Basmat, bore Reo, and Oholibamah before Yehush, Yalam, and Korach. These were the sons of Esau, born to him in the land of Canaan. Esau took his wives, his sons and daughters, the others in his household, his cattle and other animals, and everything else he owned, which he had acquired in the land of Canaan, and went off to a country distant from his brother Jacob. For their possessions had become too great for them to live together, and the countryside through which they were traveling couldn't support so much livestock. So Esau lived in the hill country of Seir. Esau is Edom. This is the genealogy of Esau, the father of Edom, in the hill country of Seir. The names of Esau's sons were Eliphaz, son of Adah, the wife of Esau, and Reuel, the son of Basmat, the wife of Esau. The sons of Eliphaz were Timnah, Omar, Sepho, Gatam, and Kenaz. Timnah was the concubine of Eliphaz, Esau's son, and she bore to Eliphaz Amalek. These were the descendants of Adah, Esau's wife. The sons of Reuel were Nahat, Zerach, Shammah, and Mizah. These were the sons of Basmat, Esau's wife. These were the sons of Oholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Sibon, Esau's wife. She bore to Esau Yeush, Yalam, and Korach. The chieftains of the sons of Esau were the sons of Eliphaz, the firstborn of Esau, and the chieftains of Teman, Omar, Sepho, Kenaz, Korach, Gatam, and Amalek. These were the chieftains descended from Eliphaz and Edom from Adah. The sons of Reuel, Esau's sons, were the chieftains of Nahat, Zerach, Shammah, and Mizah. These were the chieftains descended from Reuel in the land of Edom and from Basmat, Esau's wife. The sons of Oholibamah, Esau's wife, were the chieftains of Yeush, Yalam, and Korach. These were the chieftains descended from Oholibamah, the daughter of Anah, Esau's wife. These were the descendants of Esau, that is Edom, and these were their chieftains. These were the descendants of Seir the Horite, the local inhabitants: Lotan, Shaval, Sivon, Anah, Dishon, Etzer, and Dishan. They were the chieftains descended from the Horites, the people of Seir, in the land of Edom. The sons of Lotan were Horai, Himam. Lotan's sister was Timnah. The sons of Shaval were Alvan, Manachat, Ival, Shapho, and Onam. The sons of Siphon were Ayah and Anah. This is Anah who found the hot springs in the desert while pasturing his father Siphon's donkey. The children of Anah were Dishon and Oholibamah, the daughter of Anah. The sons of Dishon were Hemdan, Ishban, Yifran, Keran. The sons of Etzer were Bilhah, Zaavan, and Achan. The sons of Dishan were Utz and Aram. These were the chieftains descended from the Horites, the chieftains of Lotan, Shobal, Sivon, Anah, Dishon, Etzer, and Dishan. They were the chieftains descended from the Horites by their clans in Seir. Following are the kings who reigned in the land of Edom, before any king had reigned over the people of Israel. Bela, the son of Beor, reigned in Edom. The name of his city was Dinhavah. When Bela died, Yovab, the son of Zerach from Batra, reigned in his place. When Yovab died, Husham from the land of Tamani reigned in his place. When Husham died, Hadad, the son of Bedad, who killed Midian in the field of Moab, reigned in his place. The name of his city was Avith. When Hadad died, Shamlah of Masracha reigned in his place. When Samlah died, Shaul of Rehovot by the river reigned in his place. When Shaul died, Baal Canaan, the son of Achbor, reigned in his place. When Baal Hanan died, Hadar reigned in his place. The name of his city was Pau, and his wife's name, Mahatavel. the daughter of Matred, the daughter of Mazahab. These are the names of the chieftains descended from Esau, according to their clans, places, and names. The chieftains of Timnah, Alva, Yetet, Oholavomah, Elah, Pinon, Kinaz, Timan, Mibzar, Magdiel, and Iram. These were the chieftains of Edom according to their settlements in the land they owned. This is Esau, the father of Edom.
Very, very, very good reading, by the way. I really am surprised that you got different little translations that helps you get those accents right. That's probably the reason why it came out better than what we'd have in our own, the soft sounds, and they really are very hard sounding names. Did it sound very Hebraic? Little names? We won't be going into much of the names this particular time because there's just too many of them to run through. But we'll get to that chapter first. But that chapter second. Chapter 35 is where we begin with. I'll try my very best to answer many of your questions. Chapter 35, are there any thoughts, questions, or opinions? Yes.
It was interesting how when Jacob took the household gods from, that he hid them under a tree. And it almost sounds like it was done in secret, which...
Yes, it was done in secret. It was definitely done in secret.
And was it a particular oak tree or tree?
Yes, it was in a particular place and location. Yes.
I noticed she said oak tree. My translation says oak tree, and his had pistachio tree.
Yeah, oak tree is a more closer one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, oak is a whole lot closer meaning to the word than the pistachio. Yes.
Terebinth.
Yeah, what?
Terebinth.
Terebinth. Still not as strong as... The reason why the oak is that it's a very difficult tree to knock down and chop up, and so he went out of his way to bury it in that location and hit it so no one would knew it was there. And be hard to find. Almost have like a cut the tree down to get to it. You might have bored it into the oak. In other words, if there had been a hole in an oak, he could have put it inside of that oak and let the thing tree act itself seal it up. Okay? Oak can do that. Yes?
I was also the different pillars. When he built the altar for God,
okay,
he put a pillar up. And that is basically a monument,
yes,
memorial. But the pillar that he put on Rachel's grave could have been translated as an idol or an image.
It could have, but it wasn't. Okay, it's just not more than... What's this? Someone's shoe. Someone's shoe. Any more thoughts? Okay, let's begin to where now Elohim is saying to Jacob, arise and go to Bethel. Where was Jacob before God said this? Previous chapter, remember what it was? In Shechem. All right. Now the question was asked, is this tree in a certain location? Yes, the tree was in a certain location. It was actually in the town or the place of Shechem itself. So, and he buried them in that particular town, in that particular location. Now, why would he bury them there in that location? No one's going to return back to that place. None of his sons would turn back. His wives are not going to turn back. His children are never going to turn back to Shechem because they are now going to leave. And so coming back to Shechem, to this oak tree, he buried it there because they were not allowed to go back into that area again. So that kind of answers your question. Why a oak tree and where was it located at? It was located at in Shechem itself. And Shechem also starts playing more in the history later on, but we will not go there at this point in time. So, That was very interesting. Now, what were you thinking about that he, Jacob said to his household and to all them that were with him, put away the strange Elohim that are among you, or that is among you. Now, what do you see here in the picture? What was going on? Why did he do this?
Because God told him to go and...
back to Bethel.
Back to Bethel.
Right. So now he's going to enter into a place which he said was a house of God, or El Bethel. Okay? Means the God of the house. That's kind of an interesting word. He named the place, that particular area. It wasn't just Bethel. It was El Bethel. It's God of the house of God. Basically, in a literal translation, there was no other one. Okay? So anyway, and he hid them under that, and it's an oak tree, a very powerful, strong, strange tree, but also in Shechem itself. And the one thing that's very interesting here, now his translations read, I don't know if you were saying, change their clothing. Remember it? Kind of strange, change their clothing. But he also said, prior to that, he said something else. Be clean. Okay. Where else does this ring a bell?
Sinai.
Be clean. Huh?
At Sinai.
At Sinai. Right. Now, we have kind of a parallel here coming up, don't we? A parallel of what took place. He is going to take his household and the people that he was, that were working in his household, and they're going to go to a place called El Bethel. They're going to go before the eternal creator of heaven and earth. And what would they must do first? Get themselves clean and have their clothes be clean. But they had put on different kind of garments. He says, in Hebrew, it says change the garments. It wasn't just clean them, it was change them. And he had them do something else. What else did he have them do? All right. I'm sorry, what? Here. I'm sorry, what?
They had earrings.
The earrings! That's fascinating. Why earrings?
Were they, maybe had idols in them?
That's what it is. And the clothing they had to exchange and get rid of. Because it had, this whole group had a different Elohim in their garments and an image of a different Elohim, image of Elohim, period. Yes?
Isn't an earring in your ear a sign of slavery?
No.
To their old place?
No. It can be, but that's, don't want to go that far, because they do put earrings. Even God puts earrings in people's ears. Yes?
I was reading in Leviticus that you're not supposed to mix wool and linen. And the reason why is he said some of the priests with the foreign gods would mix their clothing that way in the stone.
That's true.
I think it was wool and linen. So if he says change your garments, maybe they were mixed.
It could very well have been. I do not know. We don't know what the thing is, but the key in this whole thing has to do with another Elohim. Now, your translations, have the words God's plurality. And I want to take this away from you for a while and just put you into a mind and just change the word, what it says in real Hebrew. It says Elohim as no additional plural verb associated with it. All right? So now we have that you will take and get rid of the Elohim, the strange Elohim among you. Yes?
With that, it's like it's customary when you go to a wedding or social gathering of such, you put on your best. You put on your rings, your jewelry, you go, and it's all about presenting yourself, with a good image.
Right.
He's asking for repentance. So if you're going with all your things that you go and create a great image with, if there's not really a humbleness or a repentant heart, you're still carrying all the things that you want to be identified with. And I think what's coming with that is he's wanting you to put that away with this purification, as well as getting rid of the Elohim.
Yeah, but I don't think that he was going to get them to repent. He had to command them to do that. They didn't voluntarily say, oh yeah, okay. No, he ordered them to do so. Because they're going to go someplace. And they were, if they didn't do that, they wouldn't go. They'd be left behind. He wouldn't take them. All right? And we start looking at the next chapter. We'll run into it quickly. We'll find out that you know, Jacob didn't have an awful lot of people with him. He didn't have hundreds and hundreds of men and women working for him. He did not have. He had certain servants and certain ones, but they weren't in the numbers and the huge numbers that Esau had. Esau had a whole lot more. All right? So I'm not saying this is the only way, but it's interesting. You see, all the images had to be the images or symbols of images of Elohim, regardless, and it was a strange one, by the way, but you're not supposed to even have an image of Elohim, period, point blank. What was, now he read it correctly, what was the name of Elohim, of Jacob? El Shaddai. All right. Now, that's a very powerful word. It's very, very powerful word. And sometimes we kind of run that word by as oh, that was his name one time. It doesn't mean that anymore. But it means the same exact meaning that it meant back then. Has not changed. And it means one who has the power and the ability to destroy. And so when Elohim came and talked to El Shaddai came and talked to him, Jacob knew exactly what he must do for his people, his household, all his wives and his sons and whom else, whatever they have there, and the maidservants and the men servants, they either had to get rid of these things, change their entire approach. Entire living standard was going to change real quick. There was nothing going to be like it was on the other side of the river. Now you remember, on the other side of the river, what does it say about Abraham? That they worshipped different Elohim on the other side of the river. When God brought them over from there into the promised land, now it's El Shaddai they're serving. Okay, can I remember that? Remember that, how it goes. Okay. Now, very interesting. I want you to... Verse 5. Did you catch that, verse 5? And they journeyed, and terror of Elohim, or Shaddai, was upon the cities that were around about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob. Now, you remember what the previous chapter was? What did Jacob say? You forgot. Okay, I'll read it. It's verse 30. Yes.
Well, he was afraid they would attack him because they killed.
That's right.
Someone.
However, it didn't happen, did it?
No.
And so there was something that Jacob had to see physically in his world. Remember, I told you Jacob was not some brave man who would go on and challenge his enemy. Every time so far in his life, he runs for his life. Right? He ran from his life from his brother. He ran for his life from his brother's father-in-law. And he re-ran again from his brother the second time. And now he's going running from, for his life, running from the place of the Canaanites. By the way, do you think his father ever was afraid his father ran also? What about his grandfather? Is his grandfather ever afraid and ran off? By the way, you know, it's human custom. if your life is at stake, do something about it. You know, flee, run. You know, but anyway, it's just the terror. You know that interesting word, terror. But before we get there, I want to go back and what was said in chapter 34, verse 30. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me obnoxious." Now you've read that, right? Now the King James Version has a different translation on it. What do you think it says? What is it? You got Old King James?
Yeah.
What does it say? Huh?
Odious.
Odious. What does yours say?
I'm trying to find which verse.
30. 34. Stinketh. You make a man stinketh. That is the true Hebrew word. You're making me stinketh. I smell rotten. Now, you know, they didn't like that word, so in their translation, they kept, well, you put odious in there. Let's put it, you know, some other word. But it stinketh is a real word in Hebrew. Ooh, that means this. You know, they couldn't stand him. It stinketh. So it's kind of fun, a funny word to make sure. But but there was something they also said. And they said, should he treat our sisters like a harlot? Remember that's what the two brothers said? Now, when we look at the previous chapter, sometimes we try to wonder, how come they didn't compromise? How come they didn't go in there and grab their sister and not kill anybody? It seemed like an unfair balance, right? Two young men, probably not even, they're probably teenagers, at the most, 19 and 18, perhaps, something like that, because Simeon was the second one born. And so we're having here, and they went in there, and they killed all these people. We don't know how many they were. It doesn't matter how many there were, but they did. And it sounds like, well, they shouldn't have done that. They were sneaky and coveting. Now, something very fascinating about this word terror. Do you know what that word means in Hebrew? He says, the terror of Elohim. Even though the two brothers did the killing, the people were terrorized. Terrorized, terror, like we would think of terrorists today, by the creator of heaven and earth. The brothers didn't have to do a single thing. So you wonder, oh, did God back up the actions of these two brothers? I think he did. Because, see, that should never happen, ever. So we have a picture of a little girl, and my calculations are pretty darn close to right, being 8 years old, being raped, and the death sentence was the very next thing that must occur. And it did. And the whole town paid homage to Shechem and his father. The whole town had to pay for that. Not just one man or two men, but the whole town had to pay for it because they condoned it. And in a sense, they grandized their leader. And it cost them their lives. You know, so when we think about these things, you know, when we think about a child, especially a girl, even a boy, who is sexually molested, and we here in our society have a, since we live in an evolutionary world, I mean, our society lives in an evolutionary world and you don't, they try to justify and come up with some kind of cause and effect and see if they can't straighten out this person that they will not have any more, you know, difficulties. God has one solution for it. And it works. The person never does it again. Yes?
I mean, how did you get her to be 8 years old? I'm just curious.
The aging, okay. He is her 20 years with his, and Reuben is the oldest one. Dina was the youngest of all the kids of Leah. Youngest of them all, just before they started crossing over. So she was very young. All the brothers are much older. She was born after Joseph was born. And Joseph, remember, was taken away at age 17. Some years later. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. See, Benjamin wasn't even born yet.
Yeah.
So she's very young. Everything I had done, my calculations on the age of these people, quite surprised, and it's amazing how young they were and how young the young men were. How young Reuben was, and his execution style of executing these people for what they did. Terror. It's a primary word meaning to break down by violence. Here, that word is showing up here in Genesis, this chapter, first place it's shown up is right here, and to destroy or break down by violence. Did God ever break anything down before by violence?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did he do? The flood just destroyed everything. men, women, children, pregnant women, little babies, just wiped them all out. Total destruction. And just changed the entire structure of the entire world that had never looked like it once was. We have no idea what it used to look like. All we are redeeming today, as I said before, we are still receiving the transgressions of, the results of what took place in the first world. The world is still paying the cost of the flood. You think the flood has been passed forward and gone? No. We're still paying for it. And the whole world is still in a mess of chaos waiting. The whole world is what? What did Apostle Paul say? The whole creation moans and groans as we do, but for the sons of God to take over. Alright, so everything has been created, even though you can't picture it in your world, it is in the world of Elohim. Alright, that being said, it's kind of interesting to know, to be able to break down and destroy. Okay, we already talked about the place of Bethel and the Oak of Weeping. Very interesting. Now, it says that she, her name, by the way, is a very fascinating name, Deborah. What does Deborah mean? Yes. It means a bee. Okay, now, that's, quote, a noun. So we have to figure out, okay, where'd that come from? Right? Very fascinating. You'd be quite surprised where that word came from. You will be surprised. I hope. It's brook. I'm sorry, what? It comes from the verb debar. Or debar. The word. Comes from the word. That's what we have. Deborim. Debar Elohim. We said Debar Elohim. Or Debarim Elohim. Plurality of word. That means words. Okay, but it has to have a more powerful meaning to this. And this is where we're going to come to know more powerful meaning and why she was called a bee. And it said here, basically when it's used as a Debarim of Elohim, means the word that has been arranged to do exactly his what he has said. So when God speaks his word, he's Debarim Elohim, it means that God is going to have his word, when he speaks it, it's very carefully arranged in the proper, exact order. And here we have this lady, and she was called a bee, but it came from a woman who probably had words that were very precise in a direct order. You think about that? And she was very beloved, very, very beloved, and who buried her. Oh, verse 11. Chapter 35, verse 11. And Elohim said unto him, I, El Shaddai, he gives a command, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you. A king shall come out of thee, out of thy loins. And the land which I gave unto Abraham and Isaac, I give to you, I will give it. I will give it to you. And thy seed after thee will I give the land. Then Elohim went up. Left. Yes.
I have a comment about how it says, be fruitful, multiply. It says a nation, you know, will come from you and kings. And I've heard that, you know, Judah, kings came from Judah. And then Israel, I mean nations, Amelah HaGoyim came from Joseph, you know, Ephraim, Israel.
Now, we'll get there, because the next chapter kind of leads us to something.
Interesting.
Now, and of course he left. And then we say that, it's very interesting, verse 16, and they journeyed from Bethel. And there was a little way from where? Ephrat. What is Ephrat?
Bethlehem.
Sorry, what?
Bethlehem.
Bethlehem. Okay, the play on words here. What does Ephrat mean? That's where you got the word Ephraim from. What does Ephrat mean? The word shows up quite often. Did in the book of Samuel, remember? And did in the book, I don't know any other book, right, a fan. Okay, what it means literally is fruitfulness. It's a verb meaning to be fruitful. And so when God commanded him to be fruitful and multiply, he was saying be Ephrat. Be fruitful. Now, it's also the name for Bethlehem. Now, Bethlehem means the house of bread, right? And in Hebrew, when they use the word bread, it doesn't mean the kind of bread you eat, like out of wheat or barley. It also means just plain food that's being produced. And so you're going to get your food from the house of food. Or in this sense, it'll be very fruitful. The Bethlehem will be very fruitful. Now, play on words. Where did our Lord and Master come from? Bethlehem. Very fruitful. Now, this is a prophecy. You see how plain that was? Plain prophecy that it was going to come. Now, she didn't make it there. Did she?
No.
Okay. Now, there's something very, very important, and I'm going to try to reach into this. Verse 17. And it came to pass that she was in a hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, fear not, thou shalt have you'll have this son also. And it came to pass that her as her soul was in departing, for she died, and she called his name. Why? Don't you think it's an odd word? Now, we went through, remember? We went through every one of the names, right? Of the women that named their son, and why they named their son, it had to do in relationship to what? Jacob, right? Every time they named their son, it had to do with Jacob. Now, all of a sudden, we have this one. She comes on, and she didn't name him after or because of or the effect of Jacob. Now she says, son of my sorrow. Why sorrow? Why sorrow? Was she a sorrow person? Well, we read her how mad she was and jealous she was and upset she was with her sister, right? And how her sister didn't like her either. I mean, the two sisters didn't get along with me. We read that, right? Now, this is very interesting. We'll talk about his father called him Benjamin, but he called him Benjamin much later in life. It has to do with Joseph, why he called him Benjamin much later in life. We'll get there when that time comes. And it'll probably come pretty soon. But I want you to turn to Matthew. Book of Matthew. A very strange, unusual, and almost unbelievable statement being made here. Matthew, the second chapter. All of you pretty know what I'm going to head to, right? And it's the only place, and I'm going to read three different translations here. And in Ramana, there was a, verse 18, there was a voice heard, lamentations, weeping, and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and would not be comforted because they are not. Another translation. A voice in Ramana was heard, lamentations and weeping and much mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and she would not be comforted because they were not. Another translation makes it real plain and clear. The voice was heard in Ramana, wailing and great mourning. Rachel was crying for her children. She refused to be comforted because they no longer existed. Wow. You know, that's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? So I'm looking back here, and when everything is written there in the book of Genesis, going to lead me someplace else. It's very unusual because, see, all the other men, and even Dinah, was named in retaliation against the other woman and because of Jacob. Jacob was caught. Not caught, I'm not saying it, but this is what happened to him. And if you go through all the names, you'll understand. And it's very clear. I'll tell you exactly why they're named. They weren't named there because God named them. They were named because the women named them. And why they named them? It wasn't because it was such a fantastic name. Because it has something to do with Jacob every single time. Okay? This one didn't. There's no indication that she was in sorrow. And because of something, and we call it childbirth. Yes, we can take that. Don't get me wrong. I can see a woman crying and dying for her last breath. And she could be doing it. And I'm not saying it's not true because it's literal. I believe it really was literal. That she actually did cry. And her dying. Because she was never going to see her children again. Yes.
I don't think that that's what she saw. I think what she saw was the fact that her children would be lost from the tribes which they were.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think she saw that ahead.
She probably, well, God revealed it to her. Because she was not really a woman who was after.
Yeah, God would have right. shown her that they would be lost.
I don't have to disagree with you at all. That's a pretty good point. Now, I didn't want to prick you. It's kind of fascinating that all of a sudden we have this woman in sorrow and we go all the way to Matthew and it's her. And what happened in Bethlehem? It wasn't her kids that were killed in Bethlehem. It was all Jews. House of Judah. They by the time they conquered, they had over. Bethlehem was ruled by the Jews and not by the Benjamites. And it had to do with if the Messiah was killed. And like Ellie was saying, if the Messiah actually was killed, Rachel's children would cease to exist. They'd lost and gone forever. Remember the separation that took place when Jacob had to separate his family? Yes?
Can you say that statement one more time? If Messiah what?
If Messiah would have been killed, her children would cease to exist. They'd perish and never come back. That's what she's weeping about. Okay, Genesis, back to Genesis. Verse 21. Genesis 35, 21. And Israel sojourned and spread his tent beyond, what's the name of that place you rattled off?
Here.
You know what that means? Yeah.
Not sure.
Tower of flocks, or a flock or large herd of flocks, goats, sheep. That's what that basically meaning of that word means. Tower doesn't mean in height, but tower in numbers, tower in strength. All right. Now, verse 22, very interesting word. We'll go in discussion a little later on down in the future, but right now, there's something that occurred here. What happened here is that Reuben went and laid with Bilhah. Why? Now, he's probably 20 years plus. He's not 80 years plus. He's not 40 years plus. He's still in his 20s. They just left Shechem and moved to Bethel. And now we're not very far in their future. Jacob is not, Joseph is not even 17 yet. So we know that Reuben is not an old man. Reuben's still a young man. All right? So now we look at here and say, now why would he do this? lust, covetous? What is it? Yes.
He was making a play to be the head of the household as the prodigal.
What household?
The house of his father.
He already was.
Yeah, well, as the firstborn son.
He already was.
Yes, but he was staking his claim because he'd already been in.
Why Bilha?
Because, it's who she'd born. The maid.
Who'd she bear?
She was Leah's. Was she Leah's maid? Rachel's maid.
And who'd she bear?
I can't remember.
Yeah, Asher.
Again.
Naphtali, or that
Naphtali.
Naphtali. I'm asking these questions because I wanted to know the answer, please. Yes.
Well, I think Susan is touching on a point there, is that you're saying, Reuben already has a double portion. He's the firstborn son. But to make that play while Jacob's still alive is no different than, like, in the book of Matthew when Jesus has that parable about, you have the son, the prodigal son. Oh. He goes to the father and says, I want my inheritance now. It's basically saying, I want you dead. I wish you were dead. And so this really is not that much different when Reuben did that. Because, even though he had the right to the double portion and so on, he's making that play for that while Jacob is still alive.
Interesting
that
point.
That is really cruel.
Allie.
I think he was trying to knock out the other two kids, Joseph and Benjamin, because Bilha is Rachel's maid. He is taking jurisdiction over
just
both Leah's and Rachel's kids, because there's a second firstborn son. There's two firstborn sons. There's Rachel.
Well, okay, but not
Joseph.
Biblically speaking, he's not called a firstborn son. Because every time, I've done this before, about it says that biblically speaking, every time it mentions the firstborn son, it always refers to the father's firstborn son. Not the mother's firstborn son, the father's firstborn son. Constantly, over and over and over again in all the Torah. Whenever it says the firstborn, it's always the firstborn of the father who had him. A woman could have other kids, but it's the father whose first son is. That is the primary thing in the biblical. Yes.
Then he would have taken jurisdiction over not only Leah's children, but also Rachel's children. That means.
Okay, now you're getting closer. Yes.
Reuben.
Isn't there a law that says the firstborn has to be from the first wife also, though?
No.
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 It's, no. It's not perfect. Necessarily. If there are two sons born, in other words, this is the concubine and that one's of the wife, mm-hmm. The wife gets, the son of the wife Christ. Gets the priority, right. Regardless what happens. Okay. That's true. That's the Torah. We're not in the Torah yet. We're still in the Genesis yet. Rules start coming back. Why was the Torah given? Because of sin and transgression. All right? He started telling the reason why I'm doing this, you had to understand what's right.
The Torah also says that if you have two wives, the women right. have equal status. But let's say the less favored wife has the firstborn son, but the favorite wife has the son later. You still have to give that first son the double portion.
Correct. That's
regardless
correct.
Of whether...
Regardless of whether... But it had to come in rulership by authority later because in the Torah...
No, it's the firstborn son.
I'm talking about the Torah. I'm talking about Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy.
Right.
When I'm referring to the word Torah, I'm talking about the four books, not the five books. Five books is introduction to it. All right. You want to see what I'm saying?
I thought the Torah was Genesis 2.
No, it's not. The book of Leviticus is the first time the word Torah shows up. The book of Leviticus is the very first time the word Torah shows up. It has everything to do with all the laws. All right? Okay. Well, you didn't know that, did you? First five books. By the way, it doesn't mean that Moses wrote the five books. He wasn't alive when most of it was written. Somebody else wrote about it. All right? He wasn't alive when Jacob did this. Someone else wrote it. But we'll get to how this got compiled later. Yes?
It's all speculation.
Okay. How did Genesis get compiled? I'm sorry, what? The book of Genesis get compiled.
Moses?
No.
Assembly?
The Great Assembly.
Oh.
The Great Assembly did it. And who was in charge of the Great Assembly? Ezra. He's not Ezra. Ezra was the priest. He was in charge of it. Now, who gave him the order? History. Who gave him the order to do this? Who gave him the order to do this?
Can I back up for just a minute?
Yeah.
What is the Great Assembly? I've never heard of it before.
It's in the book of Ezra. There's a number of 120 men came together. And it's called the Great Assembly, and that's what it's called. And they compiled what we have in the Bible right now. They're the ones that put it together. And someone told them to do that. Who told them to do that?
Nehemiah.
Who?
Nehemiah.
No. It was a Goyim, by the way. One of the most famous Goyims you have in the Bible.
Cyrus
gave direct orders to Ezra. Yes.
Wasn't there some type of verbal or oratorical thing that went down from the...
No, he had to pick up the writings. They picked up the writings. We assume, for some reason in our brain, that Israel, back during the time of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, didn't know how to read or write. What makes us think that? It's not true. The oldest document we have... and it's written in the book of Job, is the oldest known document known. When was the book of Job written?
Around the time of Abraham-ish. Around that general time.
Before, I think.
Okay, who is Job's great-grandfather? Esau. Job's great-grandfather was Esau. No, couldn't be that one. He's evil. No. God wanted to teach us. The book of Job is a prophecy yet to be fulfilled. Okay? For the house of Esau. Yes?
Yes. There's only one problem I see, Richard, and that is from Moses back to the beginning is a long period of time.
Yes.
And during that period of time, the record is skimpy. So, if it started with Moses and then there was a record kept, like you're saying, you know, that's fine. But to me, the dilemma and the mystery that we really won't know till Yeshua comes is, in fact, was the record that Moses made through divine inspiration or through oral tradition? I don't believe there's any other way it could have come.
I understand what you're saying, all right? But when in the book of Genesis, especially the first 11 chapters, the grammar is so radically different from any of the other writings in Exodus, Leviticus, the Numbers, and Deuteronomy. It's a different kind of a style writing, different grammar, different buildup of how words are put together in the first 11 chapters. Why? It's why called the book of Noah. Someone wrote that down. It had to be Noah who wrote it down. I believe Noah actually wrote it down. Or Shem. Well, Noah would have been the father. He would have still written it. I mean, I these people weren't dumb. They wrote documents. They also have documents of written tablets before Noah.
Yeah.
And they're still written documents on stone. It still exists today. And they can trace the names. Biblical. Wow. Names. Biblical. Way back before, I mean, before Noah was. They have the names. Well, see, we have a fictitious belief in our world. We believe in the theory of evolution, or we've been taught in the theory of evolution. And we believe that God really didn't educate anybody. They believe God just created, quote, Adam and Eve, and they're on their own and said, goodbye. Now you're on your own. But see, God didn't forsake anybody. It is He who teaches, gives, and provides. I believe very strongly that Abraham wrote an awful lot about his own experience. I believe that Jacob wrote an awful lot about his own experience. I believe Joseph wrote, who else was in Egypt, who wrote an awful lot about the thing that took place in Egypt. Who else? Who else could possibly be there at that time, quoting word for word, beta verbatim, or even statement by statement of Elohim?
Who else would have cared?
I'm sorry, what?
Who else would have cared? Like
who else?
You know.
Now, this is my personal belief. You can disagree. That's okay. But I really have a strong belief that these men were not dumb, and they really wrote them down. That's why we have records. Yes?
Well, I don't think anybody's saying they're dumb. Could it be that Moses, when he was up on the mountain, wrote the five books of
Moses? No, couldn't have. He's busy up there doing what else on the mountain? What was he doing on the mountain for those 40 days? If the book of Leviticus tells you exact precise what he had to write down, the book of Leviticus. That's what he did for those 40 days up there. That's what he's doing. I'll give credit to the book of Leviticus for when Moses up there, you know, he was a Levite, right? I mean, I'm being very verbal here, and I got to quit because I'm getting. Let's go on the next chapter. We're getting nowhere. All right. Real brief here in the 32nd chapter, 35th chapter. These are the genealogies or the generations of Esau. We won't go through all of them, but he had something in his translation. By the way, one of the sons was Amalek. Did you notice that? One of his grandsons was Amalek. Very fascinating to know that. But I want you to go to verse 15. Verse 15. What does yours say?
In 36 or 35.
What?
Chapter 36.
Yeah.
These were the dukes.
The dukes. What does yours say?
Chiefs.
Chiefs. Okay. What does yours say?
Chieftains.
Chieftains. Anybody else have any other word? She's going to look it up.
No. It's just an old English word. Dukes.
Well, the Hebrew word is fascinating. You know what that Hebrew word means? To consolidate. To consolidate, to bring together. Now, how many of these consolidates are there? Oh, quite a bit of them. What were they? Are they became Malak rulers dominating the situation? So you know, some of your translations are going to have to say rulers, but they were bullies. They just took over by mere force. They don't tell you how they died. Someone died and they took beds of a died. Probably they killed one. Now they get power. They have more and more power. It doesn't say that. But I want you to pay attention to close verse 20. You see verse 20? What does it say? All right. Now, who is Hor? What is a Horite? You're laughing. Oh, yeah, you're laughing, but not at that. Okay. It means cave dweller.
Oh, yeah.
And the land that lives, the man's name was Seir, which means, by the way, hairy, like Esau, means hairy. It also means ruggedness. Same name. So Esau, all he did was join forces with Seir. Now how big is Esau? And Edom was the main country. Yes?
Would a caveman?
No, just the ones that dwelled in caves. This is not an evolutionary concept, Ellie. Now, does this bring back to you anything in mind that we read already before? How many men did Esau bring to meet his brother? And where did Esau return? Went to Seir. All right. Now, in this process, Esau was gaining something. He was gaining the associates into one major battle. Now, let's turn to Genesis chapter 25. And all you should know by now, you've been in my, heard me rattle this thing off four times now. Oh, now you remember what it says? Well, it says in Hebrew compared to what it says in English. Verse 23, and Yahweh said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two peoples will be separated from your body, and one people will be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. What does it say in Hebrew? Do you remember?
Gatherings.
The gatherings. We're not talking about the word that says stronger and the one that says younger. The word stronger, or the older rather, does not mean old. It's not the Hebrew word for old. It means the one that is bigger. And now when it says the people's plurality in Hebrew, it says there'll be two gatherings of people separated from your body. One gatherings of people will be stronger than the other gatherings of people. And the first gathering, the larger gathering of the peoples, will serve the lesser gatherings of the people. You remember that?
Yep.
Now we see Esau join forces with Ishmael, join forces with Seir, and his own men. He outnumbers Jacob by a huge, massive amount. Yes.
And you also see in that text, you can notice that the sons of Seir, or those, that people group, become subservient or become interblended with Esau to the point where Esau is ascending while Seir is descending.
Yeah, and what we have here, because we live in the modern 20th century, and see, we don't see Esau anymore. We thought, oh, it's Esau, it's deadbed. Edom doesn't exist. Well, biblically speaking, what's going to happen to Esau at the end time? It's not, by the way, the prophecy is against Esau and not against Ishmael. Why at the end is it against Esau and not against Ishmael and not against Seir? Well, because of why? He hated his brother and he wanted to kill him. Yes.
Obadiah, the only chapter, verse 17 says, and verse 18 it says, with the day of the Lord. Verse 17 says, on Mount Zion there shall be deliverance, and there will be holiness. The house of Jacob will possess their possessions. The house of Jacob will be a fire. The house of Joseph a flame. The house of Esau will be stubble. They will kindle them and devour them, and no survivor will remain of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken.